postseason play. LSU trying to figure out a way to get enough wins to host a regional. The LSU Tigers softball team wins the regional, going to their fifth straight super regional. Got some good news for Will Wade. One player's coming back. He hopes in about 30 minutes he'll hear about a new player coming to LSU. Ed Orgeron might have lost one player while the New Orleans Pelicans gain a GM. The Wind took care of business at Bethpage Black, but it wasn't enough to stop a wire-to-wire win. And can the Golden State Warriors sans Kevin Durant break out the brooms today, Monday, May 20th, 2019?
Kawhi into the lane, cut off by Middleton, trying to shake Brogdon, spins to the right block, lays it up and in! Score take by Kawhi Leonard! What a man bucket! With 32.4 seconds to play, the Raptors lead by four!
Is lined into left center field. Mrazek racing back. It's going to bang off the wall. Mrazek's going to get it in, but not before Betts races around and unties this score. It's 4-3 Boston. A shot by Bogarts.
To the stretch, and it's Warriors charge off the turn in front. Another twist of fate. Here's War of Will, and he got through an opening on the inside at the gate pole. Owendale is storming down the center of the track, but it's War of Will coming down to the 16th pole in front. In front by two lengths late. A late charge from Longshot Emmerfast to the inside two, but nothing stood in his way. War of Will won the Preakness!
War of Will gets the second leg of the Triple Crown. Yes, indeed. The Astros' 10-game winning streak comes to an end, and the Milwaukee Bucks lose north of the border as the Toronto Raptors are now just did what they're supposed to do. Hold serve. 2-1 lead for the Bucks. Tonight, game four, Golden State at Portland with Steph Curry and company leading 3-0. Busy, busy day for you and yours. Good afternoon. Hope you had a wonderful, wonderful weekend. My main man, CD, back in the master control suite in the 237 Roof Studios. He's spinning the tunes, pushing all the buttons. We'll take your phone calls if you so desire at 337-706-0111. 706-0111. Will Wade got some good news, as expected. Javonte Smart said, you know what? Okay, I got the word. I need to come back to school. So their two-way guard, he can run the point, he can run the two guard, is coming back for his sophomore season. In about 24 minutes, give or take a few, Will Wade hopes that he will get the news from five-star power forward Trendon Watford, who will be making his announcement. He's going to be picking between LSU, Alabama, Indiana, and Memphis. This is the kind of player that would replace a Naz Reid and a Cavell Bigby Williams. You need that big guy inside, and this would be the perfect fit. So we'll find out, and we'll let you know when the time comes on that decision. Brooks Koepka toyed with the field through 54 holes, had a 7-stroke lead going into the final round. Dustin Johnson made a run. Brooks Koepka came back down to earth with not one, not two, but not three, but four consecutive bogey holes. And got it interesting. Dustin Johnson got it to within a 1-shot difference, and then he had a bad misplay of the ball with the wind on 16. And Brooks Koepka goes on and wins it, makes a bogey on the finishing hole to win his fourth major championship and back-to-back PGA titles. up next is the U.S. Open in the middle of June at Pebble Beach. And Koepka will be the betting favorite on that one. With that in mind, in hour number two, Alex Myers of Golf Digest, always our golf analyst, will join us at around 3:30 this afternoon to talk about that. The softball season for the Lady Raging Cajuns came to a close as Ole Miss got them. So still a great, great season for them. Remarkable season. Came up one game short. LSU softball survived in advance with a 5-1 win in Game 7 of the Baton Rouge Super Regional, and they are awaiting the outcome of the softball regional that's taking place right here, right now. Minnesota in the bottom of the sixth leads Georgia 8-1. So if that holds up, and it certainly appears that it will, LSU will travel to Minnesota for a Friday start in that super regional. So congratulations to Beth Tarina and company. LSU baseball wins 2 out of 3 against Auburn. Eric Walker, Landon Marceau were brilliant. The Johnny Holstaff factor worked for, it was really, really good in game 3. Unfortunately, Zach Hess gave up a game-tying 2-run homer in the 9th and another run in the 10th, and Auburn salvaged one win out of the series. Paul Mainieri will join us at around 2:30 to share his thoughts on the season, the regular season as a whole. And the most important question is, who's going to get the start Tuesday night as LSU will take on South Carolina? LSU, this is an elimination game in the SEC tournament. So LSU's in the NCAA tournament. No question about that. But they need to win a couple of games, at least 2, in this tournament to have the chance of hosting a regional. So LSU finishes up 34-22 overall, 17-13 in the SEC, a number 5 seed, and they'll take on a struggling South Carolina team that was 8-22 in SEC play. Paul Mainieri in about 22 minutes will join us, will tell us, again, who is going to get the starting nod on Tuesday. Remember, they played Thursday, Friday, Saturday, so Walker and Marceau and Zach Hess probably out of the picture. So who's going to get the ball on a very, very significant game? We'll talk to Paul Mainieri about that. So that's the lineup for the day. We're brought to you by Hooters. Hooters just makes you happy. Just does. Right there in Ambassador Caffrey Parkway. Great food, great sights. Watch all the ball games right there at Hooters. Other news, LSU cornerback Kelvin Joseph, a top 50 player nationally in the 2018 recruiting class, has entered the NCAA transfer portal. He had 12 tackles last season as a freshman. So, just because you enter the transfer portal doesn't mean you have to leave. You can come back. You can test the waters. Don't know. Kelvin Joseph says, if you don't know my situation, please don't judge me. Something along those lines. I don't know what his situation is. I don't know if LSU's got too many cornerbacks / safeties in the fray, but we'll find out what happens with Kelvin Joseph. Meanwhile, the Pelicans yet again make another hire. Trajan Landon is now the GM and the right-hand man of David Griffin. Trajan Landon made his marks. He was a Dukie. Was a terrific three-point shooter, had a brief cup of coffee in the NBA, played overseas in Europe for a few years, got into the business with the Cleveland Cavaliers, scouting, and has worked his way up. He was named the G League Executive of the Year, and he has a working relationship with David Griffin, as I said earlier. So Trajan Landon coming on board. So a lot of Dukies on this Pelicans team, led by the best Dookie of them all, soon to be Zion Williamson. So there's a relationship there. These things are done with calculated reasoning. So that's a good thing. So that's some of the highlights of the weekend. And busy weekend. Busy. So we've got the SEC baseball tournament, LSU. We've got the Sun Belt tournament with UL taking on App State tomorrow. Softball season comes to an end for the Raging Cajuns, but it lives on for LSU softball. But they have to go on the road. And LSU trying to figure out a way that they didn't play their last game at Alec Box Stadium. So Paul Menary's in the lineup at about 2:32, 20 minutes from now. Beth Tarina will start off hour number two after our Hot Topic segment with CD. Alex Myers will talk about Brooks Koepka. Is Brooks Koepka starting to do to the PGA Tour what Tiger Woods did in his prime? In other words, are people looking at Brooks Koepka and going, ah, man, if he plays his best and I play my best, I can't win. I can't beat him. And we'll talk to Alex Myers about that. I think it's an interesting parallel. So that's what's in store for you and yours. We'll take our first time out of the day, 13 minutes after the hour. We'll be back. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back. 16 minutes after the hour, Paul Menary coming up around 2:32 this afternoon to talk all things LSU baseball. Again, tomorrow night, Tuesday night, tentatively set for 8 p.m. It's the last of a four-game SEC tournament swing. So you never know how these games, some games go quickly, some games go longer, extra innings. You never know about weather. But we'll have the game for you right here on 103.7 The Game with the pregame show one half an hour prior to the first pick. So LSU is about ready to head out to the Hoover Met. We'll catch up with Paul Menary right prior to that, and we'll ask him the proverbial question, who's going to get the ball on the mound to start things off on Tuesday? Has ever a great show, a great series, has it ever ended where everybody likes it? I mean, some people like the ending of Seinfeld, some people hated it. MASH, same thing. I'll never forget MASH. Never forget. I was doing a game, basketball game, in Gainesville, Florida. I think it was Florida versus LSU. It was on the SEC Network. Well, they didn't have the SEC Network. It was on Jefferson Pilot Sports. Anyway, that was the night of the season finale of MASH. I'll never forget this as long as I live. The arena was, I'm not going to say it was filled to the rafters, but it was, they had to have 10,000 people there. Easily 10,000 people. We get to halftime. We go to commercial break. I go to the restroom, come back out, get to the announce table, put my headset on, and look. The entire building, except for maybe 50 people, is gone. They all left to go watch the end of MASH, as God is my witness. Never forget it. Now, they were all dressed in scrub suits and all. They were all going to parties. But that was a show that captivated the country, just like Seinfeld did, and just like Game of Thrones did. And some people like the ending. Some people hate the ending. I don't know how you make it where it's a good ending. I don't know what would have made it a great ending for some people. All I know is Arya lived. Daenerys got killed by Jon Snow because she killed everybody with the fire dragon. Sansa got to be the queen of the north. Jon Snow didn't die. Brienne was knighted. No more dragons died. Bran's long game worked. He was the guy that ran the final six kingdoms. He was in charge. He picked Tyrion as his hand, his right hand. So he was back now as a power player. I don't know what else you do. Could have been a lot worse. Could have been a lot worse. But we finally beat Nick Saban because he predicted Jon Snow would win it. And as soon as he killed Daenerys, that was it. That was it. And the dragon just melted the Iron Throne. Just melted it. Anyway, I don't know how you make a great ending. I just don't. But I watched, and now I'm curious as to how many people are unsubscribing from HBO as we speak. As we speak. Anyway, basketball tonight. Does Portland have enough in them for one last fight? I really believe, I don't know how it's going to turn out. Golden State doesn't look like, I mean, sure, they want Kevin Durant, but man, they look happy out there. And look, give me five Draymond Greens, and I'm going to win. I'm good. He looks like a completely different player. He looks carefree. I mean, he's doing everything. Defense, rebounding, blocking shots, stealing the ball, setting screens, passing the ball, making shots, running the floor. I mean, he gets the ball and he brings it up quicker than any other guard on that team. He's really, really playing at a level that we haven't seen in a while. I think he's been rejuvenated, re-energized. He's not complaining about calls anymore. Mama got to him. Said, Mama said, stop complaining. You look like a little sissy out there. Just play the game. He is, and he's playing it at an elite, elite level. And how that guy's not all defensive NBA each and every year is a travesty to me. But, I mean, Portland played well. They really, really did. And yet they still come up short. Meanwhile, the Toronto Raptors get one done north of the border. Play as good as they did, and Milwaukee's still hanging around. Had to go two overtimes yesterday to win it. And if Giannis doesn't foul out 1 minute into the second overtime, I'm not so sure that we're not talking about a 3-0 series there. Collision course. Meanwhile, the dysfunction that is the L.A. Lakers. Magic Johnson comes out today and just says, look, this is not what I expected it to be. I thought I had power. I didn't have the power that I thought I had. I brought in Rob Pelinka because Jenny Buss wanted Rob Pelinka because Rob Pelinka's best friend is Kobe Bryant. Now, Rob Pelinka is, according to Magic Johnson, backstabbing him, telling people that I'm never in the office, I don't do work, I don't do this, I don't do that. All Magic Johnson did was bring in LeBron James. That ought to be enough. For a little while, ought to be enough. Made some trades, got under the salary cap, got, you know, traded to get Kyle Kuzma with a draft pick. That ended up pretty good. So now we'll see. Now he's talking about the brothers, the Buss brothers, wanting more power in this thing. And how Rob Pelinka is just not really a nice guy. And we'll see. It sure looks like the famed L.A. Laker organization is spinning out of control in the wrong direction, while the New Orleans Pelicans organization seems to be spinning upright in the right direction. So, Gail Benson and her entourage hire David Griffin. They give him control. He asks for the moon. They've given him the moon and the sun and the stars. They're going to renovate and make additions to their training facility. It's going to be more modernized as far as the medical and the weightlifting aspects are concerned. And David Griffin wanted a right-hand man, someone he was comfortable with, an up-and-coming riser, and he gets Trajan Langdon. So that's all great. Is that enough to convince Anthony Davis to stick around? I don't know. Is the dysfunction and is the L.A. Lakers enough to get Anthony Davis to still want to go there? I don't know. Are the L.A. Clippers a player in this thing? I don't know. Maybe so. What about the Boston Celtics? You know they're lurking in the background. You know they're interested. So everything moving in a positive direction there. Update in the regional softball matchup. Minnesota leads Georgia now 8-1, bottom of the seventh. So it looks quite probable that Minnesota will win it and that LSU will have to travel up to Minneapolis for their softball super regional. Five straight super regionals. That's pretty darn impressive. Pretty darn impressive. So we'll talk with Beth Tarina later on in hour number two. So we'll see. Game four of the Western Conference Finals tonight. You're going to need a great performance from everybody on the Portland team. And you're going to have Golden State just kind of like, let's just go back home and wrap it up in game five. I don't know. That's the beauty of it. Portland better get off to a good start. They better get their crowd into it. But what makes Golden State so good as Portland was playing, up 17 at one point in time, in the blink of an eye, here come the Warriors. And they can get back in it so quickly. Their defense is so impressive. Their ball handling, their passing skills, and their shooters. They've got everything. Even without Kevin Durant, who will not play in this series. And with the NBA Finals starting on the 30th, we shall see what happens there. All right. Turmoil in Lakerland. How does that affect free agency? Your guess is as good as mine, but if I'm a free agent, I'm looking at that going, man, where is this ship going? And the word is out. It's hard to play with LeBron James. But if you play good, he can take you to the promised land. So we'll see. We'll see. All things looking good for my Pelicans. LSU baseball. Fifth seed in the SEC tournament. They'll take on South Carolina tomorrow with the first pitch set, in theory, at 8 p.m. The head coach of the Tigers, Paul Maneri, joins us next to give us all the info you need as the Tigers get ready for postseason play here on the Jordy Helpert Show. 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. We are Acadiana Sports Station.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
And welcome back. Regular season's over. It's postseason time. As the LSU Tigers head off to Hoover, Alabama for a Tuesday night. We're not exactly sure what time it's going to start. Tentatively set up for 8 p.m. It's an elimination game against the South Carolina Gamecocks. With all that being said, we welcome in head coach Paul Maneri as he's getting ready to take his Tigers on the road yet again. And, Paul, thank you for your time on a busy day. 34 up, 22 down in the regular season, 17-13 in league play. Kind of encapsulize the regular season so far, and thank you for your time, by the way.
Well, it's good to be with you, Jordy. I thought a regular season was a real mixed bag, in all honesty. Uh-huh. You know, it certainly was lower than our the final result of it was lower than our expectation, with clearly, you know, when you're preseason number one in the country.
Right.
But when you also lose seven pitchers, you know, to season-ending injuries or most of the season type of injuries, including a couple of starters and, your midweek starter from last year and those type of things, you know, you feel like if you had your, you know, all your ammunition, you probably would have won six or seven, eight more games. And then we're talking about being, you know, 42-14 in the national seed instead of trying to host the first round of the regional. So I think there were some good things, Jordy. We won 17 games in the league, which, you know, one year that 17 wins won us the SEC championship.
You know,
some teams had a tough year with injuries and they went 8-22 or 10 or 13-17, you know, and we hung in there and we battled and we won a lot of one-run games. I think we were 12-3 in one-run games. So, and then if you look closely, you know, we've got 19 wins against teams in the top 50 in the RPI.
Right.
We've won, I think it's 7 series against teams in the top 50. I think maybe 4 or 5 series against teams in the top 25. One series with of the 4 top teams in the SEC, they're all going to be national seeds. We didn't play Vanderbilt, and the other 3 teams, we had to play them on the road. All of
That's
them on the road.
That's right.
And we went 4-5 in those games, including a series win at Mississippi State.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there was some really good stuff. You know, and then there was some other stuff on the other side of it. You know, we had some difficult midweek losses, which in all honesty, I attribute a lot of that to the pitching injuries, because what's happening is you're having to take the people that typically would pitch in the middle of the week for you and mm-hmm. pitch them on the weekends, which mm-hmm. bumps, you know, your supplemental guys to the midweek, and you're counting on them. And, you know, sometimes it didn't work out as well as we would have hoped to. So, you know, hey, listen, the 56 games is a grind.
Sometimes
you're just glad you avoid disaster.
Yes.
And some years it turns out to be really special. This year, you know, we're in a position where we know we're going to make the NCAA tournament. Unlike last year, remember, we had to beat Mississippi State on this Tuesday game and maybe win a couple more. I think we got a bid wrapped up, and we're fighting for a host site. And if we can, you know, have a good stretch there in Hoover, you know, then we can be playing ball back here at the box, at least for the regionals. And then you never know, the regional matched up with, that other, the national seed, the top 8, that team could lose, and you could end up hosting a super regional. So things are still very possible to be here at the box for all of postseason. But we'll have to get the job done in Hoover first.
I'm the selection committee. You rattled off some stats of who, you know, you've had some big wins. You've got 17 wins. What do you think it's going to take? And you'll have to have some help along the way from others, quite possibly. But what is a realistic expectation to be able to lock up a regional host site?
Well, there's never a for sure answer to something like that. Because, again, you don't know what the other teams are going to do. Mm-hmm. And you don't know what the selection committee is really thinking. Behind closed doors, they're not very transparent, in all honesty, Jordy.
True.
So you don't know what they're thinking. They may say, hey, we got 4 national seeds out of the SEC. That's enough host sites for them. That happened a couple of years ago, I think. And then the other way they might be looking at it is, and this is the way I see it, I think there's 12 sites that are locks for being hosts, which I think leaves 4 other places that are all up in the air. And, like, for example, Texas A&M is one of those possibilities. Well, what happens if they get beat tomorrow by Florida in game 1 and we go on to win, you know, 3 games, let's say hypothetically, at the SEC tournament? You know, would we move? I don't think Texas A&M should be ahead of us anyway, because we have a better conference record and we beat them head to head, but there are a few spots ahead of us in the RPI. How about Cal Santa Barbara? I mean, they got a tremendous record, but they have not played a single game against a team in the top 50 in the RPI.
So I
don't know how the committee looks at those kind of things, Jordy, and so your guess is as good as mine. I'd feel better if we won, you know, 2 or 3 games there, but we'll have to see.
I think it's going to be 2. The fact that LSU baseball's led the nation in attendance for like 80 years in a row, does that even come into play? I mean, they don't want to play in front of empty stadiums, and you know they're going to pack the box. That's got to weigh something in their mind.
I don't think it does, Jordy, in all honesty. I really don't. You know, there was a day where you could buy a regional, but those days are far gone.
Yeah.
I think it's all based on merit now. And, you know, we're just going to have to show that we deserve it more than somebody else.
Gotcha.
Now, I don't know if, you know, that final game loss hurts us. You know, when you look at our RPI, you know, we had gotten up to 18, I think, but then the loss to Auburn dropped us to 21.
Okay.
So even if we went 2-2, does that mean we make any progress in the RPI, or do we step up and then step back? And we could speculate all we want. My biggest concern is that we just go out there and beat South Carolina tomorrow night, so
we
can stay and play on Wednesday.
Yes.
And then if that happens, we'll deal with Mississippi State and just take it one at a time and do the best that we can.
Well, you know the next question. I mean, you've just played a weekend series, so here we go. We're playing on a Tuesday, so how do you juggle? Who's going to get the ball to start, and what's your approach? Because it's a very important game.
Well, we either win or we head back to Baton Rouge. The season's not over, but you know, the chances of hosting have probably been dashed if we lose tomorrow night. So there is some value in this game tomorrow. On the other hand, it's not winter, the season's over, and you certainly don't want to put pitchers at risk.
Sure.
So I'm very reluctant to use Zach Hess tomorrow because he threw 44 pitches on Saturday.
Okay.
And that's after he threw 22 pitches on Friday. And he pitched earlier in the week against UNO. So he's been taxed over these last several days. And if I can, I'd like mm-hmm. to not use him. That doesn't have anything to do with the lack of confidence in him. It just has everything to do with his physical health and maybe even his ability to be successful. Mm-hmm. Todd Peterson's a little bit different because Todd had a day off in between throwing, and Todd's kind of got a rubber arm, and he's begging me to throw. You know, he had practice today. He's like, I feel great, you know. So what we're going to do is we're actually going to start Cole Henry. It'll be his first start since the Florida game.
Wow.
And he feels great, and he's ready to go. I'm hoping maximum probably two to three innings if he pitches well. Okay. We got to, you know, control his pitch count, and, you know, this is a step to get him ready to pitch next weekend in the NCAA tournament.
Mm-hmm.
But if he could go three innings for us, then I think the next
That'd
week, if everything goes great, he may be able to pitch as much as five innings.
Wow.
And that would give us three bona fide starters for next weekend in the NCAA tournament. So if Cole Henry gave us three, Jordy, I'm not 100% sure what I'm going to do. But, you know, I'm leaning towards Matthew Beck for a couple innings, and then maybe give the ball to Devin Fontenot and see if he can take us to the finish line.
Because if you win Tuesday, it means you got to find another starter for Wednesday. And I guess, I'm guessing that maybe Todd Peterson is your guy for Wednesday. I'm guessing.
No, I think we can go with Eric Walker on Wednesday. He pitched last Thursday, so it would be 1 day short rest than what he typically has. But he did that the last week and the week before that as well. So he's, you know, against Arkansas, he pitched with 1 day short rest. Against Auburn, he pitched with 1 day short rest. No, actually, he didn't do it last week because we went Thursday. Yeah, no, he did because
no, we
moved him to game
Thursday.
One. Yeah, because we moved him to game one. So it would only be 1 day short rest again, and I think he'd be okay, and I think Marceau would be good for Thursday. So, you know, if we can get past tomorrow, you know, then you got Walker and Marceau. Now, of course, you'll be playing Mississippi State with the SEC Pitcher of the Year, Ethan Small. And if you're fortunate enough to win there, you'll play Vanderbilt, who won the league. So it's not, you know, it doesn't make it any easier
that
we have Walker and Marceau lined up. But, you know, you just feel confident that you have your best out there.
They were really good against Auburn, Coach. They really looked good.
They did, you know, and I'll tell you, if Zach had just struck that one batter out and then got the next guy, it would have been a perfect weekend of pitching.
Yeah.
You know, we had a two-hitter, and then a two-run game, a 1-1, one-run, and a two-run game, and we'd feel great about everything. But it's amazing, you know, one bad pitch, and they tie the ball game up, and then now Hess has to throw 44 pitches, and they eventually get to him, and we can't get one across. And it turns into a real heartbreaking loss instead of an exhilarating sweep. So this is how fragile baseball is. And, you know, I've been doing it for so many years, I shouldn't be surprised by anything I see.
How taxing of a year has this been for you? I mean, because you've never had your full complement of players at any stretch in time during the course of the year, and you have had to juggle left and right and right and left and But you've never used an excuse. You've never used the injury thing, which many people would have. You've never, ever used that. But deep down inside, man, this had to be rough.
Well, you know, just because you state facts doesn't mean you're making an excuse. And some people interpret things as excuses when you're just telling the truth. You know, you get asked a question, and you answer the question in a truthful way. Do I feel like we could have been better if Jaden Hill was healthy all year and pitching in our rotation? Do I feel we could have won some more games if Cole Henry hadn't missed his last five starts? Do I feel like we could have been better if A.J. Labus was able to start in the middle of the week like he did last year?
Yeah.
You know, we lose to Louisiana Tech 12-1 last year when Labus pitched. We beat him 2-0, and he pitched six shutout innings.
Mm-hmm.
But this year we didn't have somebody like that to be able to start the game. And the reality is, you know, pitching is 90% of the game, Jordy. So when you're a little bit thin there, it's going to affect how well you can do. So when you ask the question, yeah, it's taxed me. I'll be honest with you, because I just feel like we were on the verge of having a great team, and we never really had our full complement of guys and be able to do it the way we wanted to be able to do it. And we still don't have Jaden Hill, and Marceau was delayed in his development because he had soreness for about a month. And, you know, now we're finally getting Cole Henry back, but it's not the Cole Henry that he was when he had to stop pitching.
Sure.
So, you know, listen, though, after this week, the SEC tournament is postseason, but it's not like the NCAA tournament where you win or the season's over.
That's right.
Not this year for us, you know.
That's
so
right.
I feel like if we can continue to get better this week and at least have Cole Henry back, we still won't have Jaden Hill, we still won't have some of those other guys, but I feel like, you know, we'll be as good as we can possibly be going into the NCAA tournament. And, you know, anything can happen on those weekends. If you avoid losing two games next weekend, you advance to the Super Regional. And if a national seed get knocked off, maybe we're hosting a Super Regional to go to Omaha and so forth, you know. So I'm keeping a very positive attitude
absolutely.
About it, but we just got to beat South Carolina tomorrow
that's
night.
It.
That's the big thing.
That is the big thing, and that's a good thing. Cole Henry will be there to start it off, and we'll see what he can do. That's awesome news there. And look, whatever Saul Garza's eating, just keep serving it to him, because it's the all or nothing guy. It's all right now.
Well, you know, I do think this is a good group of kids, Jordy, and even though they've had some ups and downs during the course of the year, for the most part, they've had a great attitude, and I think the best is yet to come for us. I just have a gut feeling that we're gonna go to Hoover, play well, and then you know, get ready for that NCAA tournament. So I'm hoping it'll be
That's
back
awesome.
Here at the box, but
That'd
whether
be
it's at the box or whether we have to go on a road
Still
for a new
play.
Adventure, we
yep.
just, we're playing and we got as yep. much chance as anybody else.
That's awesome. I know you got to get a rolling, but thank you for your time. Best of luck. What do they call Hoover? The box? what do they call
box
that?
East.
The box East. Okay. And they call Omaha. Well, we don't say that word. We just call the box East. Okay.
Yeah.
See, I learned. Paul, best of luck, my friend. Thank you so much for your time and for your honesty.
All right. Thank you, Jordy.
All right, buddy. You take care.
Bye-bye.
That's Paul Maneri. And there's the news. Cole Henry trying to get three innings out of him. It's an elimination game, and it would certainly – look, you win, your chances of hosting a regional improve dramatically. You lose, you're going on the road somewhere to play to keep your season alive in a regional to be announced after all the tournaments end this weekend. So very important. LSU normally does very, very well in Hoover. The fans always show up. It's a late start, so they should be good to go. Again, LSU, South Carolina, and you'll hear that game right here on 103.7 The Game whenever it starts. It's tentatively set for 8 p.m., but you know when you have three games ahead of you, you never know what's going to happen. Some games may go extra innings. There may be a rain shower here or there. You never, ever know. So always expect the unexpected when it comes to SEC tournament time. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Helfrich Show on 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the app.
All right, welcome back. Still no word out of Alabama on Trendon Watford. They originally had him scheduled at 2:30 to make his college basketball decision. Still as of here and now, no decision yet to be announced. So we'll keep you updated on that one. But a big possibility for Will Wade and LSU basketball. The awards have come out for SEC Baseball Player of the Year, J.J. Blade of Vanderbilt, Pitcher of the Year, Ethan Small at Mississippi State, the Freshman of the Year, J.T. Ginn of Mississippi State, Coach of the Year, Tim Corbin of Vanderbilt. No LSU player is a first-team All-SECer. Antoine Duplantis is on the second team. Cole Henry makes the freshman all-SEC team, and Zach Watson makes the SEC all-defensive team. So this is the 2019 all-SEC baseball teams that were just announced here a minute ago. So kind of a direct question. When's the last time that one LSU Tiger made the all-SEC team? I don't know. We'll see. So, again, Minnesota will host LSU in the NCAA Softball Super Regional, and that will be on a Friday up in Minneapolis. Still no word as I'm looking through the Twitter world and talking as we speak, just trying to figure out. Again, if you missed it, the big news coming out of LSU baseball that Paul Menieri announced here is that Cole Henry will be the starter tomorrow night. Hadn't pitched in a while, sore arm, but apparently he's good and good to go. And as Paul said, we hope to get a maximum of 3 innings out of him. And if that's the case, then we'll be in really, really good shape. And he thinks, even though it's just one day earlier, that he will go with Eric Walker. If LSU's fortunate enough to beat South Carolina, he'll go with Eric Walker on Wednesday. And if they're fortunate enough to beat Mississippi State on Wednesday, then they'll go with Landon Marceau on Thursday. Got to win this one coming up tomorrow. And I think you got to beat Mississippi State. I think you got to win 2 in a row to have the chance. I think 3 in a row guarantees you that you're hosting a super regional, because not only will you, you know, then get to 37 wins, but you'll have beaten 2 really high RPI teams in Vanderbilt and Mississippi State. So right now, LSU at number 21 in the RPI. So they got a ways to go. Vanderbilt 2 in the RPI, Georgia 3, Mississippi State 4, Arkansas 6, Tennessee 11, Texas A&M 14, Auburn 19, LSU at number 21. So if they get to Thursday, they'd have beaten the fourth highest RPI team in Mississippi State. Vanderbilt's at number 2. So there you go. All right, let's see. I'm refreshing, recharging. Trendon Watford will sign with LSU. So Will Wade pulls another rabbit out of his hat. And the big power forward, the five-star power forward, is coming to LSU. How about that? And he chose LSU over his hometown state of Alabama. So a great get for Will Wade. That takes the sting out of losing Naz Reid right out the window. Trendon Watford will step right in, 6'10", power forward, can play the power forward, can play the post. So Will Wade, look, you got Javonte Smart coming back already. All right? You got Darius Days already there. You're going to get Emmett Williams back. You're going to get Taylor back, and I still think you're going to get Skylar Mays back. So LSU basketball ought to be in pretty, pretty good shape. So great news there. The five-star recruit, it was LSU, Memphis, Indiana, and Alabama. Memphis had already signed too many players, so they were out of the running. Indiana, no way, too far, too far. Alabama, LSU, and the Tigers get the win. 6'9", 230, huge get for Will Wade. That's a way to close out hour number one. That's what I'm talking about. Boot up, baby. Hour number two, straight ahead. We'll be right back.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans.
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Oh, it's a good day for LSU hoops. It's a really good day for LSU hoops as Trendon Watford, the big 6'9 power forward, announces that he is coming to play basketball at LSU. Boy, that fills a big time need. And my buddy, longtime journalist in the state of Alabama, Kevin Skarbinski, quoting his tweet today, said, two-time Alabama Mr. Basketball will take his talents to LSU. Best of luck in Baton Rouge to one of the best high school players to pass this way. How about that? So we've got that good news. We've got the news that Cole Henry will start on the mound when LSU faces South Carolina in Tuesday night's SEC tournament elimination game. He was the ace. So welcome back, Cole Henry. With that in mind, we take our daily walk around the sports water cooler as my main man, CD, hits that button.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
Sent my man Will Wade a text. He said, thanks, Jordy. Boot up. So boot up. Good news for the Tigers. Good afternoon, CD.
Good afternoon, Jordy. And that is some huge news coming out of Baton Rouge involving a big name recruit right after getting Javonte Smart to come back.
That's good news.
My goodness. I mean, definitely a lot of good vibes going around LSU basketball after kind of a tumultuous last few months.
That's right. Very well put. Yes.
And Jordy, you know, very tumultuous was everything going on last night involving your show, Game of Thrones, last night, the finale. Everybody on social media has an opinion, Jordy. You talked about it a little bit. I'm going to get your opinion. What did you think of the finale?
I didn't mind it. I mean, what did people want? Everybody to die? They want the dragon on the throne spewing out fire from its mouth? I don't know what people want. Everybody has their favorites. But you know what? It is what it is, and now it's over. So yep. How many people are unsubscribing from HBO today? I bet you there's a ton.
I don't think so, Jordy.
You don't think so?
I don't think so, Jordy. There's a ton of great stuff going on with HBO right now. They've got a lot of other great shows going to be coming down the pipe sooner or later. Right. I'm sure they got a kind of a spinoff in mind of Game of Thrones.
There's like 1.2 million on Forbes.com who are demanding a rewrite of the ending. I mean, come on.
People got to find something better to do, Jordy.
Yeah, let it go, people.
Watch sports.
Yes, watch sports.
Watch Brooks Koepka do amazing things with a golf club over the weekend. Wow. My goodness, it was amazing to see what he did in those first two rounds. And then it was even crazier just to see him. Look like he was about to go full Atlanta Falcon, Jordy, blow a 25-point lead during the PGA Championship, comes up huge, and does something that not too many people have done before. My goodness, Brooks Koepka really making a statement as of late, Jordy. Is he going to wind up becoming one of those guys you think about whenever you consider put him in the same class as Tiger, Ben, and Jack?
Well, I'm going to tell you, he is certainly now forevermore when you mention major golf tournaments, his name is going to be in that upper echelon, that handful of two, three, or four golfers that everybody's going to pick. So, you know, he's got four major titles in 22 attempts. Tiger won four in 21 attempts. And I'm going to ask Alex Myers of Golf Digest in about 25 minutes, does Koepka, is he starting to have that same aura about him that Tiger had where, you know, if I play my best and Koepka plays his best, well, he's going to beat me. So we'll see if he has that intimidation factor about him like Tiger did for all those years. So what a finish. He proved he's human, but he still won again. One again.
And I think he definitely, not necessarily the intimidation factor like Tiger, I feel like he has. Tiger's got this aura around him. Whenever you kind of hear Brooks Koepka talk. He's just very much a laid-back kind of dude. He doesn't necessarily have a whole lot of, like, big cat in him. Like, when we've seen Tiger Woods in his prime, the fist pump and everything, it feels like Koepka's very laid-back.
He's not chasing the ball into the cup like Tiger does, and he just doesn't have that same magnitude. But boy, I tell you what, he can really hit that ball, and he can hit it a long, long way. So it's good. Now my hope is for the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach, middle of June, that come Sunday it'll be Tiger and Koepka in the final pairing, trying to win a U.S. Open. That would be something.
Oh, I would absolutely love that, Jordy. It'd be one heck of a story to talk about over the next couple of days during the U.S. Open. My goodness, Jordy. Obviously, I think the biggest story of the day is, without a doubt, Magic Johnson kind of airing out all that dirty laundry.
Yes.
My goodness, being petty as all get out, talking about Rob Pelinka saying that he was betraying him. My goodness, it's a soap opera in La La Land.
It is. It's a Hollywood script, and it was on the same day that they were announcing Mr. Vogel as the head coach, the new head coach, and Magic comes out with this one. We'll see if this thing has any teeth to it as far as hoping the Lakers can attract some free agents to come play with LeBron. Time will tell, but around the business, not many people think very highly of Rob Pelinka. That's all I'm going to say.
And I'd have to agree with him, Jordy. And you know, another thing that you had Magic Johnson mentioned was the fact Jeannie Buss has way too many voices in her ear right now. You have too many people talking to her. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing because, I mean, he dropped every name imaginable when talking about this. Because I have to say, it was nothing short of impressive what we saw Magic Johnson do this morning. Just airing out all that dirty laundry. My goodness.
Jeannie needs to get someone to be the bad cop. She's too nice. She's, you know, it's hard for her to say no to people. And that's why she listens to way too many people. She needs to have somebody that is a buffer. And, you know, you talk to him, he'll come to me, and we'll air it out and figure it out. But, you know, there's a... Why put up with all the misery, Jeannie Buss? Sell the Lakers. Get $3 billion for it and go be happy. Who needs it? Who needs it?
I think she's trying to get even more money out of it, Jordy, because yes, it probably wound up being worth $3 billion, but I think you can make a whole lot more money out of it if you can get this team back into some form of relevance in the not-too-distant future, Jordy. I think that's the biggest thing with Jeannie. She just wants to make even more of a profit off of this.
Maybe she's thinking about her dad, Jerry Buss, and maybe doesn't feel like she'd be letting him down, but whatever. Man, $3 billion. Ooh. $3 billion. Ooh.
All right, Jordy, moving over to the NFL, man. I'm interested in hearing what Eli Manning was saying when it comes to Daniel Jones. He's fine with him being drafted 6th. Is Eli Manning really that way about Daniel Jones, this guy that feels like everybody's talking about him being the potential heir to the Iron Throne, if you will?
Well, all right. In that draft class, Eli Manning, Ben Roethlisberger, Philip Rivers. Have you ever heard the Pittsburgh Steelers signing a quarterback in the first round? In fact, didn't they just sign Ben Roethlisberger to an extension?
Yeah.
Yes, they did.
And you have Philip Antonio Rivers. Brown calling him two-faced.
Yeah, Philip Rivers. They've never drafted a quarterback. They're getting ready to sign him to an extension.
Yep.
Eli Manning, 6th pick in the draft. They've never talked about an extension with him. So the writing's on the wall. If they get out the gate slowly this year and they're well behind the pack, behind the Cowboys or the Eagles or the Redskins, you're going to see Jones in, and Eli's going to be done. Done.
I can't wait to see Eli Manning get passed up by Daniel Jones, a guy that I just don't feel like is going to be worth a lick. And then the Giants just keep on tanking.
You're not a Dave Gettleman fan. Come on.
Oh, no, I'm not a Dave Gettleman fan, Jordy. Trust me. I don't even think a Dave Gettleman fan at this point
I'm
in time.
Not either. He's just taking the money. What are you going to do, fire me? Okay, I got all this guaranteed money. Yep. It's okay.
He's going to burn it all down. But my goodness, something else popped up involving the other Manning brother, Peyton Manning. Rumors abound. Obviously, they're going to deflect these rumors right away. Peyton Manning potentially being the GM for the New York Jets. Do you think Peyton Manning could work well as a general manager for an NFL franchise?
He's a pretty smart guy. I'd give him the benefit of the doubt and see what he could do. One caveat on the Mannings, there's Peyton and there's Eli and there's Cooper. And Cooper lives in New Orleans. And Cooper's son, named Arch, A-R-C-H,
yes,
just going to be a freshman in high school. He's playing quarterback for the Newman Greenies, and he's throwing the ball all over the field.
He's got video all over the place.
Oh, like, he's like, all over the place.
It's amazing. Like, I didn't even know about the guy before, like, Saturday. All of a sudden, I just see highlight film of like, a scrimmage.
Arch.
We're talking about practice. Jordy, practice.
Arch. Throwing the ball, three touchdowns, throwing the ball all over the place. Oh, man, the tradition at Newman. Unbelievable. Way to go, Arch.
Oh, Jordy, right before we get out, breaking news has kind of just popped up. Kelvin Joseph, he's back at LSU because his father told NOLA.com, the Tommy's Picayune, soon to be RIP, that he is staying at LSU. He's not going anywhere.
Good. All right. So Kelvin Joseph, a high recruit, had 12 tackles last season as a freshman. He was supposed to be in running for that other starting cornerback spot opposite of Christian Fulton. And then Stingley comes. Maybe he was thinking, hey, there's not enough love for me. But in modern football, there's plenty of room for DB. So Kelvin Joseph back in the fray. Good news. Way to go, producer extraordinaire. There's your Hot Topics brought to you by Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce on the planet. Bring a little small bottle with you wherever you go because the Biard family just produces a great product every day for nearly 90 years in St. Martinville. Do yourself a flavor. Bring Cajun Chef with you. You're going to love it. When we come back, Beth Tarina loves her LSU softball team back to their fifth straight Super Regional. We'll talk to Beth next here on the Jordy Helfrich Show.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Helfrich Show on 103.7 The Game.
Well, we know for sure that softball will come back and play yet again at Tiger Park, thanks to a 5-1 victory in Game 7 of the Baton Rouge Regional, and the LSU softball team has advanced to its fifth consecutive Super Regional. What an accomplishment that is, and we're thrilled to have the architect, the head coach, Beth Tarina, join us here and now. Beth, congratulations on a job well done. My goodness gracious, five straight Super Regionals. That's awesome.
Well, thank you so much. We're excited about it. It's looking more and more, though, like we're going on the road, not getting to be at Tiger Park here with Minnesota in the lead of the game. So
that's true. That's okay. The fight all the way slogan has certainly lived up to the billing. You had to rally after losing 5-4 in the first of Sunday's doubleheader, but you got it done. Take me back after that game. What was your thought process? How did you address your team? And take me through it.
Well, I think it's a spot we've been there before. For some reason, our team likes to do things the hard way. So we had some experience in that spot. And I think, you know, lucky for us, we have a really deep pitching staff. So I felt like we had the advantage there. We still had fresh arms. And, you know, they were out for the most part of arms over there. So, you know, I told them that it was a good spot where we were ready for. We had fresh arms, and we were just going to take it to them.
Well, you fell behind one zip in the second inning, and then Amanda Sanchez erased that one quickly. Her skill set is so good, and you've talked about her not only with her talent on the field, but such a great young woman. What did that home run do to help ignite your club?
Yeah, it did, and, you know, she didn't have the best weekend, and it was nice to see her kind of break out of that, and I think her breaking out of that really gave the team a lift, too. You know, they pull so hard for her and want so much for her and know how talented she is. So when she was able to break out of that, I think it kind of just elevated the mood for everyone. And, you know, that was really what set us into motion there to win it.
Is it true, Beth, that everybody, upon her getting back to the dugout, took the bat and kissed it for good luck?
I have no idea. A lot of crazy things happen in softball dugouts, baseball dugouts, you know, and I think some of those would just be kept in the dugout.
Okay, very good, very good. Maribeth Gorsuch, she's some kind of good, right? And, you know, she did her job, did her part for you.
She did, and she's another one. You know, it's a long season when we're playing 56 games, plus the postseason, and you know, she's had some ups and downs, but the one thing she's never wavered in is she's always led us. She's been a great leader for our team and our pitching staff, and I think it's so fitting that two of the three wins have her name next to them this weekend, because she just stepped up, did exactly what we needed and exactly what she's capable of doing. I was really proud of her.
Look, these teams are all good when they get to these regionals. I mean, Texas Tech was a good club. You gutted out a 5-4, 13-inning win against the number two seed in the regional. So you guys had to fight and claw and scratch, and that just makes you, to me, even more ready. In case you do, like it looks like, have to go on the road, you guys are tournament tough.
Yeah, I like how you're thinking. I felt the same way. I thought that the, you know, adversity, the challenge, I thought our team would be battle-tested and tough from having to go through what they went through. And, you know, I think that that will definitely help us if it, you know, does end up that we're having to go on a road to face a tough Minnesota team. That's what it's looking like.
Yeah, Minnesota with the lead as we speak right here and now. And if that's the case, then LSU would travel up there. Do we have any idea when that Super Regional would start?
It starts Friday. We did get that. I don't know game times, but I know it's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
What's the weather like in Minneapolis these days?
It's been cold all weekend long. It has been cold. It has been, it feels like in the 30s, but it's supposed to warm up this week, we saw. So, you know, we're hoping that it gets back up into something Tigers can live in, you know?
I hear you. Look, it's not only remarkable that you're going to your fifth straight Super Regional, but you didn't end the regular season and the SEC tournament in a way that I'm sure that you and all of your team members would have liked to. You struggled. You know, Alabama's just a really, really good team, and Florida kind of took it to you a little bit in the SEC tournament. So it was time to refocus and flip that switch. What did y'all do in the week, in the time that you had between the end of the SEC tournament and the start of the regional, to get this thing back in gear? Because you certainly did.
Well, I think losing in the SEC tournament is always disappointing, but in a way it helps you have a few extra days of preparation to get ready for this next round. And, you know, I think it's nice. We didn't have an opponent for 3 days. We didn't know who our next opponent was because it hadn't been announced yet. So I think going back and just working on ourselves and worrying about LSU softball, I think, you know, that was a huge, huge moment for us to just kind of regroup and get focused and be able to. It's hard when you know who you're going to play. It's hard to not think about the opponent. So without them, we're able to just worry about ourselves.
Kind of look in the mirror a little bit, a little self-reflection. Do you find out truly who your leaders are more so in that time frame than maybe other time frames?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, Amber Surratt was such an awesome leader for us all weekend long. I think, you know, when people were down, she, you know, kind of held them accountable and said, listen, we're playing for LSU. We're not playing for ourselves. Mm-hmm. We're working hard for LSU. And she was an awesome, awesome leader for us. She always has been. But I thought she really shined this weekend.
We're talking with Beth Chirina, the LSU softball team, going to their fifth consecutive Super Regional. Look, some people may take that for granted. I don't. I know the work that's involved in it. But what a testament to you, your staff, all the support people, everybody that has a finger on the pulse of your program, that is called consistent excellence. And it's, I think, something to be very, very proud of.
Well, thank you so much. It's something, you know, I mentioned to our team after the game, we have 8 newcomers in this group, and I kind of looked at them and I said, it's hard, isn't it? Like, it's really hard. I mean, if they didn't feel like playing the 13 innings and then the 2 games and the heat, you know, with all of the drama, like, it's hard. These kids have to be in great shape. They have to be, you know, on their best all the time. And something that, you know, I reminded them of, like, when you don't feel like, you know, giving your best at a workout, or you don't understand, like, we're doing it for this weekend because it's really, really hard to get through this regional tournament.
Game after game, you have to get back in that circle and keep on throwing it. So now with that in mind, it's a long, long season. You know, you don't play until Friday. What is the plan here as we speak on a Monday before you have, and when will you hit the road and travel if you have to? What is the thought process?
Well, we would leave on Wednesday to head to Minnesota if that's what happened here.
Okay.
You know, we're taking the day off. I think they need it. And so we'll get to work on Tuesday and Wednesday. We'll get to practice on their field on Thursday. And then, you know, we'll lace up our cleats on Friday and try to attack Minnesota, a really talented team led by a really great pitcher There's a lot of nice things for him in the circle, so it'll be a tough matchup.
But if any team can do it, I mean, honestly, you play in the SEC, you take on those type of teams day in, day out. If that doesn't get you ready, I mean, nothing will, right?
I completely agree with you. I think, you know, we've played in the Super Regional field 8 times this year in our 8 conference series. You know,
yes.
All of these teams are really talented. We understand what it takes to win a series. We've been in these big series. So I think that always helps us as we go into this, you know, and playing a really tough schedule, I think, always helps us as we go into games like this.
Your slogan, fight all the way, how'd that come about? And y'all are certainly living up to it.
Yeah, and we talked about that after the game as well. You know, that post-game moment is such a fun one and just something so memorable for me. But, you know, I think we talked about how what we set out to do at the beginning of the year was fight. And, I mean, if that wasn't the Fighting Tigers this weekend, you know, I don't know what was. I thought they did a great job of fight. And then, you know, after the game, my favorite thing is to take a photo with everyone. Like you mentioned, uh-huh. So many people have touched these players. But anyone that's there that has helped our team, we take that championship photo. And it's just something that's really cool. I think everybody that's touched us, helped us, supported us is in that photo. It's one of my favorite moments.
Well, you've taken, you've got more people supporting this program. It's great to see crowds like you get there. It's just, you know, hard work does pay off. And yes, you've got great facilities and they keep improving and your club keeps improving. I mean, this softball program, just stick around. It's not going anywhere, but even higher. I really firmly believe that because you know what the heck you're doing and you can recruit like crazy. So I just want to wish you all the very best of luck because you always want to go where the wind comes blowing down the plane, right? That's okay, Oklahoma City, where the wind's always blowing.
You got it. You got it. It would be great to end up there. I know it's going to be a battle to do it, but this team has what it takes. They have all the talent they need, and they definitely have the fight, as we've seen.
Well, Beth, thank you for your time and the best of luck. We certainly appreciate it, and we'll be listening, we'll be watching, and we'll be praying for you guys. That's all we can do.
Thanks so much for the opportunity and the support. I appreciate it.
All right, you're very welcome, Beth Tarina, LSU softball. They go advance to their 5th consecutive Super Regional, and it looks like as we speak, they will be taking on Minnesota, who is right now ahead of Georgia in a winner-take-all scenario there. So, we'll take a timeout. We'll come back. He went wire to wire, but it wasn't easy for Brooks Koepka. Alex Myers, Golf Digest, next. Well, it was a very interesting Sunday at Bethpage Black as Brooks Koepka made it interesting, as did Dustin Johnson, but Koepka goes wire to wire to win his 4th major championship. Alex Myers of Golf Digest was there all for all the rounds with all the subplots and the storylines involved to it. And he's kind enough to join us now. Alex, even when there was doubt, Brooks Koepka had no doubt. He's a machine.
Yeah, well, he did look a little more human than we expected, obviously, during that back nine. Kind of hopped on the bogey train there at Bethpage for a while. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, he grabbed this tournament, grabbed control of this tournament on Thursday, and he really held on to it the entire way. And, you know, part of the reason why he was still able to win was because, obviously, he built up such a big lead those first 3 days. So, you know, credit to him. It was, an impressive win on a very difficult course, and which played even more difficult than usual yesterday with all that wind. And you factor in Sunday pressure at a major and all that. It was tough out there. And, you know, even for Brooks Koepka. But, yeah, definitely an incredible win and certainly the most emotional we've seen him at any of his 4 major championships. So it showed just how much it meant to him to kind of cap off that week and, really assert himself now in kind of this, you know, all-time great, at least trending category.
Tell me something about this guy. You listen to him. You ask questions. Tell me about Brooks Koepka. What's he all about?
Well, he's all about winning majors, that's for sure. I mean, he's made it pretty clear that that's his focus. You know, I don't think you can look at his track record with four majors versus only two regular tour events and say that he isn't more motivated at these bigger events. I mean, I just think there's no way getting around that. I do think, you know, these events do set up better for him. At least he's talked himself into that. At the beginning of the week, he actually said it's easier for him to win majors because, you know, the setups and the pressure kind of eliminate most of the field. And so he thinks he doesn't have to beat as many guys. And, you know, some people kind of raise their eyebrows at that, but that's how Jack Nicklaus approached it. And it worked pretty well for him. And obviously it's working pretty well for Brooks. So, you know, is he the most flashy guy out there? No, of course not. He did give us the big fist pump on that par putt to finish, but he's certainly not going to, you know, attract fans that way. But I think he is starting to at least win over some fans by just, you know, his overall dominance.
Alex Myers, Golf Digest. Dustin Johnson, does he have the career Grand Slam runner-up title?
Yes, he does. So it's it's one of those, you know, is it that a good thing to have or a bad thing? You know, for Dustin, it's kind of a bad thing when you only have the one win. I mean, obviously, you know, players like Tiger and Jack, they've done that as well, but they've also won a bunch of these majors, so it kind of takes the sting out of it. You know, Dustin, it's incredible. Just looking at his stats this year and his scores, and you know, in the four biggest events this year, he's played incredibly. His worst score is a 70 at WGC Mexico, the Players, the Masters, and now the PGA Championship. His worst score is a 70. He was the only player to break par at Bethpage all 4 days. He was in the 60s at Bethpage Black for four straight days, and yet he still doesn't win a major. I mean, it's just kind of incredible that he could play that well, that consistently, and not come away with the win. So on some level, you know, it's disappointing, but on the other level, I just think it's bad luck sometimes. I mean, you know, bad timing. He's just gotten beat. He's now been the runner-up at the first two majors this year. Obviously, finished just a stroke behind Tiger at the Masters with that late run there. He made the late run here. You know, people will criticize him for the bogeys on 16 and 17. Once he got into within a shot of Brooks' lead. But, you know, he thought he hit a great shot on 16. It just, he misjudged the wind. It went right over the stick, and he put himself in a tough spot. Yeah. So it's just, I think it's a little bit of bad luck for him. He's been playing great, and certainly he should feel confident that he will break through again and add to that major total eventually.
That's what makes golf so interesting. You never know what the conditions are going to end up being. It looked like at the end of that tournament, it was a monsoon blowing out there. The way the wind of the flag sticks were blowing, the players' pants were blowing. I mean, that's hard to adjust to.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, again, it's not enough that there's one of the toughest courses out there. And it started to play tougher as the week went on, as it dried out a little. Mm-hmm. And then you throw in that wind. And, you know, if you look at the last 12 groups that went out there, so that's 24 guys, no one shot even par. One guy shot one under par. That was Dustin Johnson.
Yeah.
So he beat all those guys. Jeez. And so that's even why a six, you know, just a one under par round was able to move him up to being the only guy in the last, 3 hours of the day who even had a chance to catch Koepka. And again, it wasn't like he was racking up the birdies. I mean, he was just playing solid one-under golf, and that was getting it done. So that's how difficult it was yesterday.
Alex Myers, Golf Digest. Tiger didn't make the cut, so the roar did not return to Bethpage Black. The fact he just didn't play any, rustiness? What do you attribute that to?
Yeah, it's a weird week for Tiger. And, you know, I'm going to chalk it up to being a combination of just a little rust from not playing from the Masters, which, again, might be something he has to reevaluate now going forward, his schedule in between these majors. Throw in a little being under the weather. You know, he admitted as much on Thursday after that first round, and it's not one of those, he's saying he's sick now. I mean, he didn't show up to the course on Wednesday on the eve of a major championship to not show up there after he'd only played nine holes on Monday and Tuesday combined there. So something was off there. He wasn't feeling great. And, you know, you're going to have bad weeks every once in a while. Even Tiger Woods. I think what's been almost as impressive as anything in this comeback is the lack of bad weeks. I mean, he missed two cuts last year, and this is now his first cut missed this year. So, you know, all these other great guys are allowed to have bad weeks, you know, so it was bound to happen. He had contended at three consecutive majors going back to the British Open last year where, you know, he had the lead on the back nine. He challenged Brooks Koepka, obviously, at the PGA for the runner-up, and then he went to the Masters. So, again, it's tough to do that four majors in a row. I'm not too worried if I'm, you know, a Tiger Woods fan, and certainly he's going to feel pretty comfortable at the next course as well, Pebble Beach, where, you know, he's had pretty good history there.
Alex, with Koepka running away from this thing after 54 holes, and then Dustin making his run, and Koepka coming back to a little normalcy, humankind-like play, was there... It's hard to determine who else is playing well, but was there somebody? I mean, Jordan Spieth looked like he was. He was playing better.
No, we gotta mention Spieth, no doubt about it. Because let's be honest, with this setup, it really favored the longer hitters. Which you know, Spieth's not a short hitter, but he's not one of these bombers. So the fact that he was able to finish tied for third on this setup speaks to how well he's doing everything else well, in particular putting. He led the field in strokes gained putting, made some crazy, I think it was almost 400 feet worth of putts throughout the week. And, you know, it was a big weekend for him, despite not really having a chance to win, just to be able to hold up over the weekend. You know, coming in, that had been his struggle all year. He had not posted a top 20 in his 14 previous starts, so to finish a top three at a major is obviously a huge step in the right direction. Now, of course, he's a guy who's already won three majors. You know, by the time he's 24, you know, he's not looking for moral victories like these other guys are. But in a way, I think he did need something to go his way, and certainly, you know, he wasn't ever going to catch Koepka on Sunday, but the fact that he was able to hang in there and battle will do a lot for him going forward. And again, the putter is really the key. It looks like he's maybe figured some things out there. He's making a lot of putts.
All right. So I love the fact that they moved the PGA up. I hate having a whole month off between, you know, the Masters and the U.S. So I thought that was great. Certainly not Tiger in the final, you know, two rounds. Doesn't help ratings, but I love that. But now you've got next month, you've got the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach, and I'm sure that Vegas has Koepka as the betting favorite to win three straight U.S. Opens.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. As he made the turn yesterday, Jeff Sherman, the odds maker at Westgate Superbook, put him out as a 5-1 favorite, which is pretty rare to have someone that big of a favorite. And but by today now, he's moved to 6-1. And where DJ started at 8-1, he's now up to 7-1. So now he's not a huge favorite over DJ. It looks like there's been some early action on DJ. You know, of course, Dustin has a great track record at Pebble Beach. He's won there twice. He's been a runner up there twice. And the last time they held the U.S. Open, he was the 54-hole leader in 2010 before he shot a 80-something on Sunday. He fell apart. But anyway, it kind of makes sense that with his track record, he would still get a lot of backing. But yeah, you know, you would think Brooks Koepka might be a bigger favorite than that. But he is the favorite, but it's close right now with he and Dustin Johnson.
Do they? I mean, look, it's June 13th through 16th at Pebble Beach. Are they going to try and Koepka-ize the course? I mean, what do you do? The guy hits it 350, it looks like, sometimes. And he gets out of the rough. I mean, what do you do? How difficult will they make this course?
Well, yeah. Again, it's another one of these courses by the water that, you know, it can play really difficult if the wind picks up. The thing that's going to make it more difficult for Brooks Koepka is that Pebble is not as big of a course. And so while he could still take it apart, if he's feeling confident with the driver, like he obviously was this past week, other guys will have a chance to hang. More other guys will have a chance. So what I'm saying is it won't weed out as many guys right off the bat. Pebble will play, you know, a lot shorter. It'll still be narrow landing areas. You'll still have to be very accurate off the tee. That's where I don't think it'll be anything to slow him down necessarily. I just think he will probably have a little more company on the leaderboard this time. At least we hope, because, you know, those first 3 days were kind of a snooze fest. I mean, he was just cruising.
Yeah. Golly sakes alive. Great crowds. They got festive in the thing, and, yeah. Man, they had to move crowds all over the place because those balls were going left and right, hitting into the patrons' areas. It was a wild Sunday, crazy.
It was, and you know, some people thought it got a little too wild with the crowd. You know, there's already been talk about the Ryder Cup coming back to Bethpage or going there for the first time in 2024, and you know, if the crowd going to be this amped up, obviously, for a PGA Championship where there was very little drama, you can only imagine what they're going to be like at a Ryder Cup when you have, you know, the USA versus Europe dynamic and you have all these different matches. And, you know, certainly no matter how big of a blowout it is at the Ryder Cup, there's always a chance on Sunday with all those singles matches for someone to come back. So you're going to have, you know, more drama there, people rooting for yeah. sides. You know, you're going to have it's going to be wild. So I'd already seen a lot of, you know, European players and golf writers kind of say that they're not so sure it's a great idea to have it there, but certainly it's going to draw a lot of interest, that's for sure.
No question. Alex Myers, Golf Digest. So I'm sure Tiger's going to play again between now and June 13th. Koepka, does it even matter? I mean, I know he needs to play, but you never hear of him during the regular tour weeks.
Yeah, it's funny, and you know, he did play the week before at the Byron Nelson, and I think he finished fourth place. He had a nice finish there, but it was a totally different golf course. And then he comes to, you know, it was a wide open golf course, hit it wherever you want, kind of. More than Bethpage, and then he comes to Bethpage and just turns it on like he does at all these majors. So you're right, it doesn't seem to really matter what his preparation is. Obviously, he is doing preparation, though, and we heard all week how even at his rental home, he was practicing his putting stroke in the basement with his coach. So, you know, this guy acts all cool and then everything else, but he's, you know, he's working hard out there just like these other guys, and he's certainly zoned in. But yeah, Tiger will play this time in between the majors, at least we expect, because we have the Memorial in a couple weeks, which of course is Jack Nicklaus's event, one of the bigger non-majors on the schedule. So this time he will get to play in between, and so then if he plays poorly at Pebble, we won't have that excuse, at least for him. We'll have to stick to some other reason why he played poorly, but we should see Tiger in a couple weeks at the Memorial, and then at the U.S. Open, and then there's a good chance he won't play in between the U.S. Open and the British Open. So, you know, we might only see him, you know, this
couple of
Memorial,
times.
The two more majors, and then the playoffs. So, we're kind of running out of time to watch him this year.
One last question before I let you go, and I greatly appreciate your time. When Tiger was doing what Tiger did, he always had that edge, and he had that advantage over everybody else where, oh, my God, it's Tiger, we can't win. Is Koepka getting to that point? Is he starting to get into players' minds like Tiger did?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think he definitely is. I think you kind of saw it on Thursday, even as early as Thursday, when he shot the 63, and they asked Tiger how he played after, and he said, yeah, he played well, but he could have shot a 60. And it was just kind of like this. Yeah. He expected him to play well, and Jordan Spieth kind of said the same thing, and then on Saturday, Xander Schauffele had a comment about how it was kind of demoralizing that they're all just playing for second, and it did remind me of when Tiger was, you know, in 2000 winning the U.S. Open by 15 and then winning the British Open by 8 in back-to-back majors, and you had guys like Colin Montgomery and these older players being like, what do I have to do here? I mean, this guy is just too good. So I do think you're starting to see that. I think he did show a little bit of vulnerability, obviously, with those bogeys on the stretch, but the fact that now, basically, when he has put himself in the lead at a major, he has closed it out every time he's had a chance. Yeah. You know, that definitely is going to be a worry for players when they see his name on the board.
Alex, I can't thank you enough. I know it was a long weekend. You had to walk that course without. Oh man, go get some rest, my friend. But thank you as always for your time. We greatly appreciate it.
You got it, Jordy. Thanks for having me on, man. Take care.
Take care. That's Alex Myers, Golf Digest, Koepka, trying to win three straight U.S. Opens, and he would be the second golfer ever to be able to do that. Yeah, we'll see. We'll take a timeout. We'll wrap things up on the Jordy Helfert Show.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Helfert Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back. Busy, busy day. My goodness gracious. All good things pointing in the Pelicans' way and backstabbing taking place in Lakerland. They may have LeBron, but who wants to go play at that dysfunctional franchise? It is just in a mess and a half. Fun show. Thanks to Paul Maneri for joining us. They're on their way to Hoover, Alabama for the SEC tournament. Special thanks to Beth Tarina, who'll take her Lady Tigers up to Minneapolis for the Super Regional, and to Alex Myers, Brooks Koepka. For 54 holes, he was just dominant. And then became a human being again and had some tough holes. And Dustin Johnson made a run, but Koepka survived and won his fourth major championship. This one, the PGA at Bethpage Black in Long Island. Man, that weather started hitting up, and that was something. Very, very interesting. So special thanks to them for coming on board. Let's do our daily history lesson. It's that time of the day. We take you back to May 20th, the year 1995. Michael Jordan was out of the league. He was playing baseball. The best team in the league at that time were the Houston Rockets. And on this day, Mario Elie hit the kiss of death shot to lift the Rockets, a huge three-pointer to break the tie in Game 7 of the Western Conference Semifinals. The Rockets beat Charles Barkley and the Phoenix Suns to get to the Western Conference Finals. And then the dream, Akeem Olajuwon, took over, and the Rockets were great until Michael got back in the league, and then he won three straight NBA titles yet again. But it was on this day, May 20th, 1995, Mario Elie's kiss of death three ball. Yes, indeed. All right. Birthday wishes. If today is your birthday, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. Hope you have a lot of cake, a lot of ice cream, a lot of fun. Yes, indeed. You share your birthday. Happy 42nd birthday to NASCAR's Toni Stewart. And she's still performing. Happy 72nd birthday to Cher. I got you, babe. Yes, indeed. Cher never stops entertaining. Cherokee people. Unbelievable. All right. It's your anniversary. Happiest of days to you and your better half. And I hope you keep adding year after year after year to it. Brought to you by D.C.'s Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. They've got that true soul food deli tucked away in the corner. Best cheeseburger you'll ever taste, and so much more. And then inside the store, they've got everything you need for your travels. No matter if you're going 5 miles or 50 miles or 500 miles to the beach, does not matter. They've got everything you need. So if you want a fun ride where everybody is happy and everybody is content and satisfied, why don't you stop off at D.C.'s Little Capital Exxon, I-10, at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge, and Frankie will take care of you. Great staff, clean, neat, ready to serve you each and every day with all kinds of items, gift items, and boy, does Frankie love some sports. So if you want to talk sports, look him up. Frankie will talk to you all about it. All right. Tomorrow on the program, you know that LSU will be playing South Carolina in an elimination game in the SEC baseball tournament. The winner will play the late game on Wednesday against Mississippi State, the Red Hot Bulldogs. So doesn't get easier, but Paul Menary announced on the show that Cole Henry will get the start tomorrow. Try to get three innings out of him, and then we'll go from there. Then he thinks he can get Eric Walker to pitch on Wednesday, and if they win that one, they can get Landon Marceau on Thursday and go from there. So that's the plan, and we'll see if it's executed to perfection. So there we go. There we go. So we'll preview that and much, much more. It's game four of the Western Conference Finals. Can Portland survive a sweep? We'll recap that as well, as the Golden State Warriors, if they win it, would have about 9 days rest before the 30th of the month when the NBA Finals start. CD, job greatly done. We greatly appreciate your help. Thanks to all of you for listening in to our partners that make it possible each and every day. We have only one Monday. Make it a great one. Come on back tomorrow. Same time, 2 to 4. Same great station, 103.7 The Game. 1037thegame.com. Until then, I'm Jordy Helpert. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty. Bumper to Bumper Sports next.